You're listening to Around Comics, episode 129. This is Around Comics, the comic book roundtable, where twice a week you'll hear a revolving panel of guests discuss everything in and around the world of comic books and graphic novels. On every Thursday episode, like this one, you'll hear either topic discussions, creator interviews, Comics 101, or creator spotlights. Today we're talking about event comics in the modern age. I'm Christopher Niesman, and Sal and Scotty are still on hiatus.
Yeah, they're still, they left and they're not coming back.
Honeymoon.
They went to Hawaii, where their relationship is accepted by the law, and I respect that.
I think they're having a hell of a time.
I think they're probably having a great time.
I should be there.
Yeah, Hank, Mr. I got tickets, I'm just going to show up.
I do have a ticket.
Yeah, you just didn't go because... That's great. You didn't go because it was just like slightly inconvenient for you.
They
people know, would kill for that ticket, and you were just like, it's gonna be kind of tough.
They're playing a show at my house next week.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So Sal and Scotty are being angry in Wisconsin, watching
Rage Against the Machine.
So good for them. But Mr. Tom Caters is alongside.
This
usual.
Is an event. Yeah. Right here.
And it's event because Hank is here as well.
Oh,
okay. Youth correspondent Hank. He's our youthful member.
He hasn't elevated to intern level yet, but he's working on it.
You're just making fun of me because I'm not old.
Yeah, I know.
Well, before we get to our main topic today, I want to let everyone know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend, whether you like it or not.
Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
You'll get on the show like I did.
Yeah, you'll just show up and we might be like, get on the show.
Pretty indiscriminate.
The first guy, the homeless guy, when this is, it's actually 3 in the morning. We recorded 2 whole episodes with a homeless guy. And then at the end... You know, we did all this talking, and he was talking about all these old event books, and at the end he said, I don't read comics.
He was great.
Yeah, well, yeah, totally fucked us, but it's fine.
Well, let's get into today's main topic, and it's events.
Woo!
Whether you love them or hate them, they're a huge part of the mainstream comics landscape, and they don't appear to be going away. The history of events and crossovers in comics go back to the World War II era books with such team-ups as The Submariner and the original Human Torch. But today, we're jumping forward to a more modern time and starting our discussion with the early 80s and bringing it all the way to the event books on comic shop shelves today. All right, well, like I just said, that you can trace event books back to the 40s and 50s.
And Captain Marvel versus the Monster Society, the original one back in the day.
It's all of the JLA, JSA crossovers, yeah, which we talked about in the JSA Comics 101 episode.
Zatanna looking for her father.
There are crossovers are just about as old as comic books.
As old as making money.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, what it comes down to is... When you need to boost a book's sales or you see an opportunity to sell more books, it's by putting, you know, more characters into a book. And
the event is sort of born of the comic book. Like, wouldn't it be cool to see this, you know? Because Well, I mean, really what it is, it's all these events are just opportunities to see, like, oh, Spider-Man with the X-Men, or Superman and, you know, the Metal Men, or Jonah X in the same book as Superman. You know, that's what banks on that, like, ooh, isn't that cool factor.
Yeah, and it makes sense, and it is fun. You know what? It is fun to see Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman in the same book. That's why they started the JLA. And without the JLA, there probably wouldn't have been a Fantastic Four. That's really kind of the genesis of that book, came whenever Marvel saw the opportunity to say, hey, you put a team together, and it offers more than a standalone character. So, you know, event books kind of came out of that. Yeah. But we're going to kind of skip over a lot of the Silver Age stuff and even a lot of the Bronze Age and jump right into more the, you know, quote-unquote modern era. And I think that the two big events that kicked off the major crossover event style books were Marvel's Secret Wars and DC's Crisis. And
Infinite Earths.
Crisis. Yes.
Is there so many Crises?
That's a lot of Earths.
Well, yes. You know, for me, you know, I grew up as a Marvel fan, and Secret Wars was just that. It was the fanboy chance to see all of your favorite heroes and all of your favorite villains get transported to a battle planet to fight each other. And it was this great, no holds barred, you know, 12 issue series.
It's not complicated.
No, it's a great, fun concept. And you go back and you read it, and I don't know if it stands up to, you know, our modern storytelling, but it's still
I don't know
a
if it stood
series.
Up at the time to storytelling, but But it was, you know, it is what it is. So
there are so many of my favorite comic book memories growing up are rooted in Secret Wars. Seeing Spider-Man fight the X-Men in, what was that, issue 3?
And beat them.
Oh, yeah. Which is bullshit. Like, I think, redheaded stepchildren. Yeah, it was Spider-Man absolutely, you know, just undressed the X-Men, and it was awesome.
Cyclops.
And I was an X-Men. I was an X-Men fan. It was still cool. You know how deep rooted in a lot of comic fans' psyche is that cover for issue 4 where the Hulk is holding up the mountain and saving everyone.
Well, I remember the action figures that sprung from Secret Wars as being one of my most memories.
Yeah,
Mark is talking about the fact that Hulk held it up because they were calling him a pussy.
They were making him mad.
So many were not at the time. They called him probably earlier. You're a woman.
Yeah,
no, I'm kidding. I don't know. That's true. You're a girly man.
That was like the last time that the Hulk was relevant to me. You know, until I guess what John Byrne did his run. But you know, Secret Wars. I mean, like you said, the concept was pretty simple. You just take all these people, put them
someplace.
Yeah, and have them fight.
And it was great because in their regular books, they disappeared 1 month and then came back like a month later, and there were subtle changes, but
you had to read
Secret Wars.
Yeah, you had to read the whole.
Why is She-Hulk in the Fantastic Four? Why is the Thing not come back? Why is Spider-Man in a black costume?
Yeah, yeah.
It was very simple. It was a very simple idea that has spawned both the Bane and love of.
Yeah, when that Spider-Man issue came out, you know, kind of that recreation of the Amazing Fantasy 15 cover, yeah. And he's in this, you know, wow, what is this outfit? And you had to wait, there was issue 8 of Secret Wars where you really found out where that came from, and you know, without that, there's no Venom. You know,
there's no Spider-Man 3.
There's no Spider-Man 3. Yeah, I would have stopped it too.
Without Secret Wars, without Secret Wars 8. So, you know, that really kind of started the big events for Marvel in that age and then moving forward. But on the DC side, I think there was something that had even farther reaching effect and was an event for a lot of different reasons. And that was for DC to kind of straighten up their continuity, but they were also able to tell a great story with it. And that's Crisis, which Tom, that's right in your.
I think it's a great book because it's at the time there's a lot of sort of characters floating around the DC universe that didn't make sense. You know, they had all their Western books and they had all their it's sort of also sad in a way because it was signified the end of an era where you couldn't have horror books and you couldn't have straight crime detective books, and you couldn't have Western books. And it was sort of their way to put all those to rest and, you know, get rid of them. And they were sort of love letters to those old books. But one of the things that we, if you get the Absolute Edition, mm-hmm. is they point out that every single character in those books is a character from something. Like, even the detectives who are, like, at a crime scene, their names are names of detectives from some, you know, old book. They hired a guy to read the entire DC library.
Yeah, you're dealing with decades,
to come up with.
Decades
yeah.
and decades yeah. of DC.
And I mean,
books.
It's almost nerdier in a way than Secret Wars, because it's like, I want to see Earth 2 Superman and Earth 1 Superman, you know. And it was sort of cleaning up this huge mess, and at the end, you know, they killed tons of characters and mm-hmm. cleaned things up, and supposedly, not really, but, you know, supposedly cleaned things up. And it's, you know, it's just a huge event. You saw everything. You saw every character in the DC universe, pretty
you
much.
You had years of unbridled editorial, almost, where it's yeah. like people were writing stories for the fun of it, and you know, I miss a lot of that, you know, that fun in comics. Yeah. But you know, at some point DC had to say, okay, you know what, we really do need to clean this up.
Yeah.
But now I think we're to a point, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, that having a multiverse is fun.
Yeah,
because it does allow you to tell all these great yeah. stories that don't have
52.
To be canon.
Yeah, I mean, reading the original Crisis, you see every character, you see every Western character, you see at some point you'll see everything in that book, and that's, you know, that's what's sort of great about it and sort of sad about it, because then a lot of that disappeared for a really long time.
It really is a before and after series. I don't think that you'll ever hear anyone refer to stuff in Marvel.
Post-Secret Wars. Pre-Secret Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, it changed the history for a lot of characters, and it made, I mean, they relaunched Superman, Batman was completely changed, New Flash, Wonder Woman's history was completely restarted. I mean, they took all their icons and really, you know, flipped them around.
Sure.
Started from the beginning with a lot of them.
You know, Wally West. That was the changeover from from Barry to Wally. So,
oh, don't make me. Issue number 8 makes me cry. Barry dies.
Moving on to some of the events that followed that. You got to talk a little bit about Secret Wars 2. And
yep.
that's where the Beyonder, who had whisked everyone away yep. to his battle planet, the Beyonder comes to Earth.
It's funny because when people bitch about Secret Wars 2, I always think a character that was pretty much only a plot device in the first one. Like, he was really only an excuse to get all these characters
we'll
in one place.
Call him
all
the
of
Beyonder.
A sudden, yeah, all of a sudden he becomes like a character in the second one, and it's like, this jerry-curled guy is, like, wandering around the universe.
Yeah, just a step up from a leisure suit.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's so bad. That was probably the first case of event fatigue, which we will address later.
It was so much. There's so many books. And some of them were good. There was a...
Sure.
I love the New Mutants one where they all die.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when Magneto was in charge of the school, and he doesn't know how to get them... They all die, and the Beyonder brings them back, but they're all sort of demoralized because they died.
Yep. Oops.
Yeah. Which was a great story, but then you get, you know, 10 horrible Secret Wars.
Oh, you know, one
stories,
of the
so.
Best standalone Human Torch stories was the Secret Wars 2 crossover. But the crossovers were pretty much over every book.
Everything had,
And it was, it could be, you know, the Beyonder having a cup of coffee. And that was a crossover. And
well, that's like the Crisis crossover. The Crisis crossovers were, oh, look, it's a red sky.
Yeah.
You know, that old trick that goes on. But
so that kind of raised a red flag to what would come in the following years. But Secret Wars 2 had its moments. But
yeah. There's some good stuff in there, but there's so much, though. I mean, there's so much that crossed over. It wasn't going to be a hit constantly.
A few of the other DC crossover events in the 80s, Legends,
yep.
Invasion, and Millennium.
Some of those were, Legends was quite good, with Len Wein writing and John Byrne doing art, and it was sort of it was the introduction of the new continuity in a sort of way. It was a 6-issue miniseries about Darkseid making a bet with the Phantom Stranger that he could make the people of Earth turn against superheroes. So he sends Glorious Godfrey, one of his characters who can convince people with the sound of his voice, to try and convince them that all the superheroes were, you know, villain, you know, were evil. So you had this situation where, you know, Captain Marvel is accused of murder, and you kind of saw, this is the first time you saw Captain Marvel in the DC universe, really.
After the fall.
After how he fits in, and you saw the Suicide Squad for the first time. And it was like just a quick six-issue miniseries that sort of introduced, you know, Wally West appeared for the first time in that, as, you know.
Kind of their post-crisis kind of continuity.
Yeah, that's how it worked
Kickstarter.
Out. Invasion, which was plotted by Keith Giffen, was written by Bill Mantlow.
Oh, wow.
Who did the actual scripts, and it had art by Todd McFarlane for the first issue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it came out, it was a three-issue series. McFarlane did the first issue. I forget, now it passes my mind who did the second. I think Giffen might have done the art, like, on the second two. It's like a, it was a 380-page, you know, miniseries with a bunch of tie-ins, and it was about all the aliens in the DC universe decided that Earth was too dangerous because they had so many superpowered beings, so they decided to conquer Earth. And that was the story, was this invasion of all these aliens attacking Earth.
I see a lot of alien invasion events.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was all about the DC characters fighting against this alien invasion and trying to, you know, fend them off. And there were some really fun stories in, you know, involved with that. And there was a great Suicide Squad, some great Suicide Squad stories involved with that. You know, and Australia was destroyed, apparently, in that story. And there was all some millions of people killed. And Millennium, we'll just do it really quick. That was Steve Englehart and written, Joe Stanton drawn, and it was the Guardians of the Universe, the people that sort of the little blue guys that run the Green Lantern Corps, are gonna go off and have sex with their female counterparts and mate, so someone needs to be in charge. So they appoint these new, the people that are gonna become the new Guardians. It's like eight people on Earth, and they become. This series was really bad. They became these like eight, these eight very stereotypical characters. Like one guy's like, oh, the angry guy, and one guy's like the flamboyantly gay guy, and it was just horrible. But the big thing was that the Manhunters were trying to kill them. So every character in every DC book had a someone that had been in the book who was really a Manhunter spy. And was revealed, which was kind of, that was kind of fun, because you'd be like, oh, this person was really a spy, you know, and but it just caused, it was ridiculous. Like, it somehow Superman, the Doctor in Superman in Smallville was a Manhunter spy, and like Lana Lang was a Manhunter spy, and it was just like all this shit that they had to like figure out and solve. It wasn't that good. Invasion was pretty good. Millennium wasn't very good.
Well, switching over to Marvel in the 80s, after Secret Wars 2, things kind of moved on to mutants. And X-Men, at that time, X-Men is where it's at. That
red hot.
Smoldering hot. Blowing up.
Best at what I do, and what I do is events.
Yeah, this is really when the X-Men became the franchise at Marvel. You know, Wolverine is, you know, I think at that point probably the most popular character at the company, if not the most popular. He's given Spider-Man a hell of a run, and we have back to back from 1986 to 1987, two big events in the X-Men line, and that's Mutant Massacre and Fall of the Mutants. And Mutant Massacre. Boring, you say?
Boring.
You know, when I was...
Mutant Massacre when I was a kid.
Yeah, I was 13, 14.
Mutant Massacre is when the Morlocks were all killed. Most of them were by... Every time I say Mr. Sinister, I laugh because it's such a terrible name for a character. Yeah.
Yeah, but you see this, you know...
The Marauders killed all the...
Yeah, the And you see this, you know, kind of all out war on mutants, and how this affects the X-Men, and you know, it's kind of hard to think back on it, but you know, for me being, you know, I think 13 at the time, and just being a huge X-Men fan, this is a big event. Oh my God, these mutants are being slaughtered.
Angel lost his wings.
Yes, he did.
He became Archangel.
That was the only one
Yeah. he lost his, yeah, because it's so much sweeter to have, when wings are awesome, but you know what's really awesome? Having knives for wings. Is there any way we can get him knives for wings?
And all of a sudden you're blue.
Yeah, and you're blue.
Your
totally
skin
awesome.
Is blue and you have knives for feathers.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's the whole Fall of the Mutants. Is that where the Four Horsemen?
Yeah. There was a good Thor tie-in issue, though. If I remember, there's a really good Thor issue where he burns out Mutant Massacre when he has to burn out all the corpses in the New York subways, and
right.
He's the one that finds Angel. You know,
that's right. Thor did rescue him, didn't he?
Yeah, I remember all this stuff.
And then Angel ends up
trying to kill himself.
Yeah, and
boo.
Did he go to?
Well, Apocalypse. Yeah. Well, he tries to kill himself, and his helicopter blew up, and then Apocalypse took him and made him into Archangel, which was the wing knives for
death.
Wings. Nine. Yeah.
Yes.
Knives for wings.
The Four Horsemen of Apocalypse. So,
which hasn't been beaten to death.
a few other events in the 80s. Evolutionary War.
Don't Follow the Mutants wasn't. I just want to mention they killed Doug. They killed Cypher in Fall of the Mutants, and that always pissed me off.
Oh, poor Doug.
He's my favorite
poor
New
Doug
Mutants
Ramsey.
Character. Yeah,
and it seems so senseless.
I know. All for that fucking bird brain. That guy who just, yeah, whatever. I'm still bitter.
Inferno, which is where we see Madeline Pryor and her true origin. Wasn't that Inferno?
I only remember these 80s mutant events through New Mutants. I don't remember them through anything else. And I like the New Mutants. I always think of them like, oh, yeah, I remember those issues.
Inferno is where Madeline Pryor is turned into the Goblin Queen.
Yes.
Yes.
Magic becomes, yeah. See, that's the only way I remember 80s Marvel stuff. If it was a New Mutants, I remember
Magic
it.
Is back in the new X-Men now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should ask Scotty. I'm sure Scotty remembers.
I'm sure Scotty knows all about that.
I'm sure he does. Yeah.
Some of the DC events in the 90s.
You're just gonna skip over Acts of Vengeance.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Avengers fan. I can't really.
I liked that one.
Acts of Vengeance is good.
Okay, well, Mr. Beatty
didn't
wants to come
I,
over and
that's
talk
when
about
Iceman
Acts of Vengeance.
Had to start wearing that belt.
It was the belt.
Yeah, because Loki jumped up his power. See, I remember all this. Because I'm like an encyclopedia.
It was basically they was it the villains got all together basically and attacked each other's heroes. So you didn't see you saw those saw those battles that you like seeing, you know. Heroes against villains they've never fought before. It was Punisher went after Doom. You know, things like that. I mean that's just classic stuff. I'm not saying it was a great story or anything, but you know. It was fun to read all the different crossovers with new villains. Something you didn't get to see because it was always Doom and the Fantastic Four, Magneto and the X-Men, and who had Loki and Thor. And
I want to see Doctor Doom fight the X-Men.
Yeah, I mean nothing worse than seeing Loki versus Daredevil because that's an even fight.
Yes, that would be. That's easy to write. That's an easy story to write.
Hi, my name is Tony Danza, and you're listening to Around Comics. Hi, my name is John Romita Jr., and you are listening to Around Comics.
Also, Atlantis Attacks, which was one of those annual crossovers, which was infuriating.
Well, Marvel was doing these, it seemed like every annual, they did these, crossover annuals, the X-Men and the whole, Mephisto, where it was, the FF and Avengers and X-Men. Yeah, I remember that one. Where they started making these annuals were the kind of event crossovers.
Yeah.
Wow. But DC in the 90s.
Some of these I remember, some of these I don't. Armageddon 2001.
That was a great one. Just kidding.
Yeah, that was a horrible one.
It was the one where Time Rider goes around and he touches
Wave Rider.
Their future, ran through all the annuals.
Well, Armageddon 2001 was also the one where people figured out the ending and then they changed it so it didn't make any sense.
From his name.
You know, they made
Captain Adam.
And it ended up being horrible.
Yeah.
It wasn't that good to begin with.
They changed it from Captain Adam being the villain.
I mean, to go from slightly okay to bad wasn't that huge of a disaster. And then there was War of the Gods, which involved the Olympian gods, like Mercury racing the Flash and all that sort of stuff, which was it was okay. I mean, it was not earth shattering in the tradition of everything else. You had Eclipso, the Darkness Within, which I think Eclipso kills a bunch of Infinity Inc. members in that, if I remember. But
every time a big event happens, they just kill some Infinity Inc. guys. Don't
yeah.
They?
Well, yeah. Well, you got to pick someone to kill. Nightfall, was that when Batman's
that's
back?
That's when Bane broke Batman's back. So.
Which people love. Reign of the Superman, which is the post-Superman dying after. With all
is
that.
Is that when there's two Supermen?
There was four, Hank. There was a cyborg Superman, Superboy, Steel. Don't cower. I'm trying to teach.
Tom just hit
the ruler. I'm trying to teach you. I'm trying to teach you a lesson.
We've seen some characters out of Reign of the Superman that have had a pretty long life. He had Connor and Steel and
Superboy. Eradicator.
Is it Hank Henshaw? Was that the cyborg or
Reed Richards of the DC universe?
And there's you also have. I didn't read Worlds Collide with Milestone Media, so maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that right now. But
Zero Hour.
That was the Dan Jurgens written and drawn one where he. The only problem I have with Zero Hour is it was sort of an attempt to fix continuity problems that came up from Crisis on Infinite Earths, but it just sort of spawned new problems. The one thing I hate about this series is that they decided to kill members of the JSA, but they didn't just kill them like fighting. They had X-10, yeah, steal their life energy away so they died of old age in front of you, which I just thought was, yeah, it was just sort of like...
We won't just kill you.
Yeah, what an undignified way to kill, like, these characters that have been in your company for, you know, 60 years. But Dan Jurgens made up for that by drawing Booster Gold, but I've been bitter at him for years for that. Final Night, which is where the sun goes out. Also, Zero also had Parallax, Hal Jordan, another travesty of storytelling. Final Night, the sun goes out, and it's like dark on Earth. It was a little short one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hal Jordan redeems himself by restarting
the
Earth.
The sun,
so saved himself. And there's DC 1 million, which dealt with, it was a Grant Morrison sort of helmed project with all the DC characters. A million years in the future, you know, Batman runs like a prison planet on Pluto, and you know, it was all that sort of
which
fantastical. Yeah, well, yeah, oh yeah, they're gonna have to retcon that Pluto's not a planet anymore.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison bet Grant Morrison sitting around and DC 1 million doesn't make any sense. Those are sort of of those ones there aren't. Final Night was okay. Actually, of all of those, DC 1 million is probably the one that I enjoyed the most. Because it was the least, like, dire. You know, the rest of them all
sense.
The
90s was kind of a tough time for the whole big events.
It just seemed everything was so, like, sad without actually being good. That DC 1 million was sort of fun in the sense that it sort of played around with the characters and it wasn't so, like, looking out to kill a bunch of characters with knives and guns and stuff. So, of those ones, DC 1 million is probably my favorite one of all of them.
Yeah, Final Night sounds interesting, though.
It was it was a little long. I didn't think it really needed as many tie-ins and all that. You know, it's pretty loosely tied in a lot of stuff. So,
Marvel Comics in the 90s. I think one of the more popular ones and one that I remember fondly was Infinity Gauntlet. For Marvel Cosmic fans, this was a chance to see Thanos and his now infamous Infinity Gauntlet.
The Gauntlet with jewels.
Yes, where you put the six gems. Jewels into the gauntlet, mm-hmm. and it gives you omnipotence over the universe and how all the heroes had to stop him from doing that. So, Infinity Gauntlet. While it was, I think, a really fun event, it unfortunately spawned Infinity War and Infinity Crusade, which I think both suffered a little bit.
from having to stop the same thing from happening over
yeah,
and over again.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's,
hey, it's that time of year, everyone. Let's get together.
It's time for another Infinity crossover.
Yeah, let's do it.
Did you read the recent Illuminati issues?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
Which I enjoyed, where now all the members of the Marvel's Illuminati, it's revealed that they each have one of the Infinity Gems and keep that in safekeeping and don't tell the other ones where they are because it's the power that could be unleashed by that.
There might need to be Civil War Infinity. Infinity Civil War.
That's how they're gonna fix it. Skip over a couple, you know, Rise of the Midnight Suns and Star Blast. I think one of the more successful events in the 90s, and one that I think that fans that how I kind of look back on the Mutant Massacre and Fall of the Mutants with kind of this nostalgic kind of rose-colored glasses. Look to it. I think a lot of people look at Age of Apocalypse that way.
I do.
I know you do.
I remember I loved all the stuff in Age of Apocalypse, and I was actually disappointed when it ended. So I remember there was the X-Men Omega issue, which was supposed to take place 6 months later, and it was just the opening scene was like Wolverine in the forest, and it was raining, and I was like, God, this is the
Here
same. Goddamn story we left out.
Well,
yeah, it was the total
setup,
change.
The setup of Age of Apocalypse is that it's an alternate reality where Apocalypse is ruling the Earth, and
Xavier dies before he can form the X-Men, and Magneto takes over his role. You know, and it sort of flips everything around.
Yeah, Cyclops is a bad guy. You basically have all of the good guys are bad guys are good guys, cats and dogs getting along together. It was. This total alternate reality, and you get this really kind of new, unique twist on a lot of these characters that I think it opened the door to a lot of the characters that were great villains, and it's like, wow, that's a really cool character.
Yeah.
And it opened the door to a lot of those characters kind of jumping over and
becoming, where they had to figure out, like, there's some way we have to get Dark, the evil beast, to come over. So
it's like, Mystique can be such a cool character. You know, it's like, let's try her out as a good guy. I think Sabretooth was a
hero
good,
in that
story. Yeah, and I think that started a trend in, especially the X titles, where you get these really cool bad guys, and somehow they end up being good guys.
We're gonna make them good. Yeah. So it was sort
like,
of a,
I'm sorry, Juggernaut should never be a good guy. It's not right.
No, I agree with you.
I don't agree with that.
There was Onslaught, too, which came after that.
You know, so many of these series I just didn't want to list for so many different reasons. But
that was huge. That was everything was involved with that.
1996, I'm checked out at that point. I wasn't reading comics, and I hear stories of Onslaught, and it's like, what, last year, Onslaught Reborn?
Yeah.
I had no interest, absolutely no interest. But, there are still people that look back on some of these 90s events and enjoyed them and liked them. By that point, I had kind of checked out.
It all depends on when you begin is when you start to burn out.
Yeah, event fatigue had gotten me.
It'll hit everyone.
Let's jump into the 2000s and go back over to DC. Our World's at War in 2001.
It was another alien invasion story.
They're good at that at DC, aren't they?
It had way too many tie-ins again. There was parts of it that were pretty decent. You had some nice, like, one-shot issues of, you got to see the JSA fighting aliens and stuff like that. And it was pretty fun. It was a fun series.
Well, I think that kind of brings us up to, I think, what the meat of this episode is going to be. And that is kind of the current state of events. And, and Hank is like, oh, my gosh, finally.
Finally, I can speak.
Hank is going to get to
you
something
old timers.
Stuff I can talk about.
I wasn't even alive in the
80s. Do you want to start with Marvel or DC on this?
Yeah, start with Marvel.
Okay, we'll start with Marvel, and I think that you can draw a pretty straight line on what is going on in the Marvel universe back to Avengers Disassembled, and that's really where the current state of the Marvel universe really kind of started to develop.
Yeah.
And that why I didn't get all of the Disassembled offshoots, what the Iron Man or Thor Disassembled. I did read the mainline Avengers Disassembled, yeah. And of course the
remember
backdrop.
It pissed people off.
Disassembled.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it was the death of Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And that was with the now famous "not like this."
Not
line.
Like this.
You know, it was actually a pretty neat twist at the time, and I think everybody spoilers ahead. You know, from here on yeah. out, when we're going to bring this up to current events. But the nice twist.
Did
that,
we spoil Secret Wars?
Yes, I think we.
Thanks a
we
lot.
Have.
Fuck.
The good guys win. Scarlet Witch has kind of fallen off of her rocker. She has gone completely insane due to the stress of losing her twins.
Being in love with a goddamn robot.
And and then that strikes out against the Avengers and kind of systematically destroys the Avengers. Hawkeye dies. Vision is ripped in half by She-Hulk.
Ant-Man.
Scott Lang.
Ant-Man. Dies. Yeah, Jack of Hearts.
Jack of Hearts blows up. It is really Avengers Disassembled is a pretty appropriate title because it is the end of the Avengers. The Avengers as a series ended with this, as they were pretty much totally wiped out and decimated. And you know, it's the events of this go right into House of M, which we'll talk about in a minute. But The other crossover titles, you know, Iron Man Disassembled, Thor. This is where Thor dies,
yeah.
is in Thor Disassembled. They had all the. Did you read the crossovers from Disassembled?
No.
I was really more into the mainline series. Hank, have you read Disassembled yet?
Wikipedia.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, hello. We got a young whippersnapper with his internet.
Internet.
Well, the events of Disassembled kind of move right into House of M as Scarlet Witch, at the end of this, kind of creates this alternate, you know, Scarlet Witch reality where all of the heroes get their kind of fondest wish, and she has created this world where mutants rule. Magneto is the head of the House of M. And there is a an underground rebel group that doesn't agree with the way that Magneto is running the planet. But you see, you know, Spider-Man is more of a celebrity than a superhero.
He's pretending to be a mutant.
What I always liked was Captain America. You know, Steve Rogers didn't get frozen. He was
got old.
Yeah, he was able to just live out his life. So, you know, in House of M, he's an old man. And as House of M goes along, Layla Miller, who is now in X-Factor, is a mutant who knows that things aren't right. And she can wake the people up, the heroes up, to the fact that, you know what, this isn't real. This isn't the reality that you come from.
I think House of M was a bit of a victim of its own setup. Means that it couldn't mean. I mean, I don't know what when people say an event doesn't mean anything.
I liked House of M.
I didn't.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good.
I just thought it was. Because what I was gonna say is that. Because of the setup of the story and the way it goes, it's like literally at the end, it gets reset.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'd be okay with if there wasn't so many crossovers and so many things that had gone into it. Then, because I mean, I know that doesn't make sense critically, but it makes sense as a consumer you know, to have bought all of
you
it.
You didn't have the total reset because you had the No More Mutants. And that,
yeah.
I don't know how much that has changed the Marvel landscape. They really haven't addressed
it. But it seems
that
like
much.
All the 198 that survived are all the 198 that show up in the X-Men books. You know, like how many X-Men characters?
It's actually not. It's not 198 that survived. That's a kind of a misconception.
It's up to 300.
Well,
maybe.
The 198 was there were 198 mutants in that camp.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, I just think the No More Mutants thing. It's convenient to say that. Well, I mean, Morrison killed five million mutants in the first issue of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much did that change any X-Men book? I mean, the number of mutants are just whatever you want to make
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's an arbitrary
it doesn't
number.
Change
if you need a mutant,
storytelling.
You make one,
yeah.
You just make
and they
one
still
up.
Do it.
Yeah,
if you need,
sure.
if you need
sure
a mutant, you just make one up.
But I enjoyed the suits. I thought the timing on it was maybe a little off.
I thought the idea of it was good. And mm-hmm. I thought that if it was just smaller scale, I think it would have gone over better. But because it was built up. You know,
oh, it was the huge mega.
Yeah,
event.
And it sort of had an ending, which I think was naturally going to disappoint a lot of people. But I thought the idea of it was great. I thought it had like a solid story behind it. I just thought it didn't quite fit. I think what it was billed as, and necessarily what expectations.
Well,
were
I think it starts a trend that we see in event comics mm-hmm. today, and I think more so on the Marvel side than the DC side, but that is one event bleeding into the next,
yeah.
and you don't have this full resolution, and it's like, okay, House of M is over, but now you need to read this for the fallout of... And
yeah.
which was 198 and, you know, Son of M and all of these other little minis.
I mean, they both do it now because
yeah.
you now have the 50. Well, we'll get to it.
I think that's when people start to talk about event fatigue, this is what they're talking about, is that you don't give us time to breathe in between these quote-unquote mega events.
Well, I also think it's people don't get fatigued by reading good stories. As long as you can keep them. But the thing is if you spread your idea out so thin, like there's only so many ways that the main concept behind House of M is a pretty nice concept. It's an alternate universe story. But when you take that idea and you spread it out
over the entire universe,
across the entire universe, and it starts to have holes in it, and it starts not to have, you know, a unique feel to it. And just like, you know, DC takes, you know, one year later or whatever their idea of how to do it, and then you spread it out thin, there's going to be holes. There's going to be series that aren't as good.
Sure, you've got multiple creators that maybe aren't, you know, that's where editorial comes in, but it's hard to, now we're getting into continuity over storytelling, and that's where continuity can, if that ever overtakes storytelling, then the pendulum is too far to one side.
But I also think the more you spread it out, the more that's going to happen.
Exactly.
Because you
exactly.
can't fit every story. You can't suddenly make every story fit that.
Yeah.
You need to either break continuity or tell the story. And then at some point you have to decide, well, why am I telling?
And from a creator standpoint, it's like, you know what? I just want to tell my story. I don't want it to have to fit into what is going on in the overall continuity of,
well, you know, to keep going from the House of M, like when the Civil War, you know, draws into that, you know, as well. And Civil War is probably, you know, as we get farther and farther on into our modern age of events, I mean, that also crossed over with a lot of stuff when various books were better than other books too. And I mean, it's just the same case of
Let's go ahead and move on to Civil War, and this is where, you know, Hank, who's been reading comics for about 6 months, is going to be...
About a year. Civil War got you into comics.
Which is great. You're one of the people that Joe Quesada was talking about.
Yes. I'm his favorite fan.
Why Civil War? Why did it get you into comics? And what's
Do
this?
You regret it? Yeah. Do you regret buying comics?
Hate this. I'm a huge movie buff. And so I was always into the Spider-Man, the X-Men movies, the Superman, Batman. And I always tried to go... There was this comic shop by my school. So I always tried to go there and grab books whenever I could. And I used to grab them and then just read, like, what the hell is going on? Like, I didn't understand any of it. I would always grab it in, like, the middle of a story arc or something. And I wouldn't know anything was going on. And so I gave it up for, like, a year or two. And then I saw X3, I believe it was. I saw X3, and then I'm like, maybe I should get back into comics. So I went to a different comic book store, and I actually asked the guy, what should I read? And he goes, well, have you ever read comics before? I'm like, In and Out. And he's like, well, this is a perfect jumping on point. And I read Civil War I, and I've been going back every Wednesday since.
Wow. It worked.
Perfect timing.
It worked.
Now I just feel like I'm old and bitter. And
but I thought that, like, I didn't know that it was a huge event. I thought that happened all the time in comics.
It does.
Like,
it does, Hank. It does happen.
It does.
Like, Spider-Man's taking his mask off. Like, oh, what the hell? Like,
yeah. Did you feel, when you were buying Civil War, were you drawn towards buying the tie-ins?
Oh, I bought, every tie-in.
Were you okay with that by the end?
After I realized...
Did you already become embittered?
Mistake.
Did you become embittered by
then? I shouldn't have. I realized that I shouldn't have, but at the time I thought it would be the right thing to do, because then I would understand everything.
As kind of
Look how quick you got jaded, Hank. You got jaded in, a year.
As an endurance test to myself, I bought every Civil War tie-in.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone. And I'm just like, no, never, ever, ever again.
Never do that again.
If it had that band on the bottom of it, I bought it.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Civil War as an event, and this has been bandied about on the internet, for the last year. Was it a success? First of all, was it a success?
Yeah, I mean, it sold huge amounts.
Okay.
300,000 copies each, right?
I mean, I don't know if... Every single one of those copies the stores ordered got bought, but it certainly sold a ton.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's successful.
It was a huge commercial success.
Oh yeah.
If you wanted to jumpstart a sagging title, you threw a Civil War banner on it.
And sometimes, Heroes for Hire started off with 90,000 copies and got canceled within 12 issues.
Yeah, because it was an immediate. Jumpstart for that title, and then whenever it wasn't a Civil War tie-in, it
plummeted. Yeah.
It killed it.
But a book like Ms. Marvel, got that huge burst and still around. Still.
That's because Brian Reid's pretty damn good writer.
Yeah. I mean,
not that Tommy Outie and Gray are bad writers, but I think Ms. Marvel is a book that it struck a chord with people. I think that's a character that
And I think it got exposure from Civil War, absolutely, which is how a lot of people found out. So, I mean, that's sort of the positive end, to having everything, everyone gets a taste of everything. But
talking about events, and we kind of went back, at the very beginning talking about it, is that events can be a way to turn readers on to books that they're not reading.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the nice side effects of events now, to find a book like Ms. Marvel, or, on the DC side, to, find a book like, Birds of Prey, whenever they're doing some of their crossover work. That's a nice side effect. And Civil War definitely did that. We're now out of Civil War, and events have shaken out.
Are we going to talk about the Initiative?
Yeah, yeah. Is the Initiative an event?
I don't even know.
They put the damn banner on everything.
It's been on Fantastic. It's going to be on next week's Fantastic Four. I don't understand what makes it the Initiative. I love
it. It's like Back to the Secret Wars Tuesdays.
I don't
even
understand.
The Beyonders
having
a freaking cup of coffee in there somewhere.
But the thing is, it isn't even that. I don't understand what makes a book an Initiative book. And I think it's like this great, because I now block it out when I see it, because I'm like, well, it's an Initiative book, every book. And then I'm like, wait a second, not all of them are. Just there's certain books that have been Initiative books for like 6 months, and I don't understand what makes them Initiative.
I can understand, Iron Man,
Avengers Initiative.
Which is it the Initiative, Avengers the Initiative?
I think it's Avengers Initiative.
And do they have Initiative banner across the top?
I hope not. That's overkill.
Yeah. The Order. Does the order?
Yes, it does have an Initiative banner.
Which did you read the second issue
of
the Order? Very good, very good. It's there's a great Britney Spears, Paris Hilton thing going on in there, which you'll get a charge.
But Initiative banner, and that thing gets thrown around like no one's business.
It is on just about everything. So is the Initiative there? Initiative Moon Knight. Why? I don't know. Is the initiative, is it classified as an event now?
But I don't understand how any of them tie together.
It's just the state of the Marvel
Universe.
Yeah,
that's what weirds me out about, because I'm reading Fantastic Four, but from what I can tell, it doesn't have anything to do with
the 50-state initiative
any more than any other book does. But
you know, there actually is another event going on at Marvel right now, which I think is will be fun to talk about, because there was a mini event last year called Planet Hulk, which was 12 of the finest issues that have happened in a Hulk in
It's
real close to being one of my favorite runs ever on the Hulk.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. I'm a sci-fi buff, and it had all of those great elements of what makes the Hulk fun.
Yeah.
And I think Planet Hulk was a great mini event
that
was going on away from the rest of the Marvel U. But then, of course, it spawns World War Hulk, which is
what we're in now.
Kind of the capper to Civil War in a lot of ways. So.
Yeah.
And it's not as good as Planet Hulk.
No. I mean, it suffers from the thing where I think I said last week, where events aren't going to be great works of literature because they're...
And why?
Because they're the blockbuster movies where you fit everyone in. Yeah.
You're trying to appeal to the masses, and whenever you do that, you're going to have a watered-down, more vanilla product.
I mean, but also, it's not to say that the event, that Planet Hulk, that World War Hulk... hasn't been fun in certain ways, but it's also...
I don't think it's as good as Planet Hulk.
No, it's not. It's not as good. It's not as good of, you know, it's not as well written. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's
but
sort
it's
of
the same writer.
I know. That's the crazy thing, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't that weird that it's not, I'm sort of interested to see how the crossovers sell for World War Hulk. Because I feel like...
It was like the biggest selling Ant-Man issue out of the Irredeemable. Like, that's not saying a whole lot.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like... I know a lot of people felt burnt by Civil War front lines, you know. Who's buying like World War Hulk front lines? I'm gonna be interested to see how
what the numbers are on that.
Yeah.
I got all the issues of Civil War Frontline. I didn't bother with World War Hulk Frontline.
Yeah.
I liked Frontline for about half of that series.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. Run 5 or 6 is really.
I am going through the event burnout, and with World War Hulk, didn't get all the tie-ins.
I'm just getting World War Hulk and the Hulk, but I might actually drop it until after.
I'm just getting World War.
Yeah, it's we've mentioned event burnout, and before we get into DC here, you know, probably want to address that a little bit. They're not gonna stop doing events.
No, as long as they sell, they'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
Which is what they... But also, and we'll get into this with the post, because we're masochists.
Yes.
We bitch about whatever event's going on now, and then when the next event comes around, we get all psyched up, and then we buy them.
Hi, this is Andy Parks. You are listening to Around Comics.
Well, we also have the DC events, you know, with Infinite Crisis.
And I think we actually probably need to step that back just
Identity
Crisis, because it comes up in a post that it's really a trilogy that they're working on. Identity Crisis event, but and I guess there were some crossovers with that.
Not a ton.
A couple?
A few.
Yeah.
A few, and...
I consider it really more of a miniseries than a crossover event, but definitely there's been stuff that's come out of
Identity
Crisis.
I mean, it spawned tons of story, you know. The Flash, you know, The Secret of Barry Allen was a whole series based, you know, it was Jeff Johns' run, you know,
Disappearance of Ray Palmer, which we're seeing the effects of now. For Identity Crisis, fan, did you like it?
I did like it.
Okay. Brad Meltzer.
I thought it was a completely different take on the... to me, when I was growing up and I was a DC fan, all my comic book friends that were Marvel fans would make fun of me because DC books were, like, for children.
Yes, they're the kid books.
They're the kid books. And it was like, well, here's this. Obviously, it wasn't exactly true because there was plenty of books, even when I was a kid, that was coming out from DC.
They were perfectly
fine, you know. But Justice League was sort of like, wow, you can take the Justice League and make this very serious
Well, people thought of the Justice League as Super Friends.
Yeah.
So,
and it was sort of, you know, the big lightning bolt moment where it sort of became. I know a lot of people don't like Identity Crisis for various reasons.
And yeah, there are people that give it a real hard time because, you know, the whole rape thing. Yeah. When it's, yeah, it's it was a pretty, you know, a pretty adult story for the JLA. It's a murder mystery.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good story. I enjoyed the miniseries, and we're still feeling the after effects of it. We get, you know, Jean Waring becoming Eclipso comes out of that series eventually.
Well, the elongated man being a character of any, like, interest.
Consequence. Yeah.
Yeah, is from that series, you know, and we still felt that up to the end of 52. Like, that character was a joke for 40 years. And not a joke in the sense that he's like a whimsical, just like you toss him in when you need like a funny D-list character.
Another stretchy guy.
And he became a character that was strong enough to like help carry an entire series based upon the events in that book. Right. You know,
he was the stretchy Batman. He was the stretchy detective.
Yeah. I mean, that and Identity Crisis completely changed that character.
Identity Crisis, looking back on it, is really when I started coming into DC. Yeah. It was the first time that I can really remember saying, you know what, stuff going on in the DCU is stuff that I can read and really enjoy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was.
Well, there's a lot of people I think that feel that same way about it. And I mean, in Identity Crisis, sort of fed in, it was sort of the kickoff towards an Infinite Crisis, which was, you know,
kind of that's the Planet Hulk to World War Hulk comparison to
Infinite
me.
Crisis
Identity
is a bit
Crisis,
of a,
I liked Infinite Crisis,
not so much. Had its moments, had its weaknesses.
It was 7 issues, and I think that 5.5 of them were really, really good.
Yes. Yep. And there's parts that did not work out very well.
You felt the editorial strings at the end of it, where you felt the series going in a direction, and you're like, wow, they're gonna do it. They're gonna do something major here, and it's just like at the end, it just kind of it's like it tripped right before the finish line.
It's gonna happen, but that's what happened with it. I mean, it had a lot of tie-ins that were, I mean, like all these events, some of the tie-ins were awesome, some were not awesome, some were interesting opportunities to tell stories about certain characters. Some just ended up being pretty much filler.
I actually liked the whole lead up to Infinite Crisis.
Oh yeah, the miniseries.
The minis were great.
Yeah.
You know, OMAC was good.
Days of Vengeance. Day of Vengeance.
Villains United may be my favorite lead in series to that.
Oh yeah, they were. It was great. It was very well organized. I mean, the anticipation for that was so high.
Oh.
Right, you know, right, starting with Countdown to Infinite Crisis.
But wasn't it funny in really the switch in fan reaction from issue 6 of Infinite Crisis to issue 7?
Yeah.
It's you think that comic fans can turn quickly?
Yeah.
Just go back to a message board like the Wednesday that came out.
Like flipping it around, yeah. And I mean, in hindsight, it was okay. It was all right. I mean, but that's sort of how all the events end up. Is as bad as an event is, you still always have. I mean, as much as I dislike Zero Hour, there's still cool moments in Zero Hour. But the end of the story is not necessarily.
I thought there were some very poignant moments in Infinite Crisis. I thought there was, you know, some crap in Infinite Crisis.
Yeah.
but
I mean, to me, talking about all the events, like the one event that I think is the most interesting is what came out of Infinite Crisis, which was 52, which was the weekly series that DC put out right immediately afterwards. All the books during Infinite Crisis jumped a year forward, and 52 was going to tell that story of that missing year. And
which that's kind of funny. It didn't really do that.
Because it ended up just being about, and what I love, when we're talking about event comics being an opportunity to show C-list characters, like 52 is the ultimate example of taking C-list characters and making them
Animal Man, Corey, and Adam Strange.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Elongated Man, The Question, you know, taking all these characters that you know, most people don't know anything about, is making a series about those characters. Yeah. A really great series. Booster Gold, you know, taking all these characters that no one cares about and making, like, a great series about them. And, you know, Black Adam, taking all that stuff. And it
and getting
to me,
you to go back to the shop every week to keep up.
Yeah,
with
it was such a weird, you know, looking back on it, I mean, like, to me, that was such a great event for getting people into reading these small characters. And then, you know, I mean, DC sort of dropped the ball a bit because they couldn't really get 52 to the success of 52 to apply to
Countdown?
The rest of their book.
Well, oh, okay.
To the 1 year later books. They couldn't quite translate
that.
Yeah,
you know, I think that comes back, you know, I mentioned it a little bit ago that I think creators, and rightfully so, I think they have stories that they want to tell. And
they couldn't quite get it all to mesh together.
I can see that as a writer or, you know, writer-artist team. It's like, you know what, yeah, we want to do this 1 year later thing, and we know that you're doing this whole deal, you know, cross-company continuity, but you know what, I just want to tell a story about Batman kicking the Joker's ass, and, you know, or I've got this great story I want to tell about a mystery, or, you know, I want to take this person off planet, and whenever these events, you know, really handcuff creators, I think that's whenever it creates a problem.
I think it was just interesting because I thought it was a time where people were generally interested in not the big three.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason people didn't look beyond 52. Well, I mean, because 52 was set up and you didn't need to read anything besides 52.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no need to look beyond 52 to, like, see more.
Did you read 52, Hank?
I read it.
To Wikipedia?
Yeah. It was right when I first started getting into comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I was put off by, like, I didn't know who any of these people were. So I read the first couple issues. And I didn't like it, and so I didn't, because I was looking for Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and stuff. So
it was a year without them. So
yeah,
you're
I was like,
on that counting.
Yeah. So I'm more mature now, I guess, and I know that they don't have to be in there to tell a good story. And I'm waiting for the hardcovers because I heard that episode that you guys had, and you guys love it. And so I've heard nothing but good things about it. So
We enjoyed it. And it's,
I can't wait till the hardcovers come out.
It went through a little bit of a lull that I feel that Countdown has gone through. Countdown's a completely different animal than 52. And 52 really did kind of help shape a lot of the things that are going on in the U now. You're seeing, you know, the Booster Gold series is coming out of that. Crime Bible is going to come
Black
out
Adam,
of that.
Black Adam, Metal Men, all, you know, all those, they're launching. Now is the time when all those series are starting to launch out of 52. So, and those are the ones I'm anticipating probably more than Countdown, you know. I want to read the Booster Gold because I'm like, it's the great continuation of the 52 story, you know.
You know, I see two major differences in the events from each company, and not just the events, but just kind of the direction that each company is going right now. And DC really seems to be embracing their history a lot and bringing a lot of these older characters into current storylines and trying to build things beyond the big three.
Yeah.
And Marvel, while I think that Marvel's events are still relatively good, I just see a very different direction with what they're doing than what DC is doing.
Yeah.
It's two very different ways to handle events.
DC introduced, brought back their crazier elements, and Marvel grounded theirs even more
in reality,
which was sort of, you know, DC said, well, fuck it, let's bring back the multiverse.
The Metal Man.
Yeah, in the multiverse and have tiny robots and shit like that. And Marvel was like, let's have a book about, you know,
politics.
Hard choices and politics. And one isn't necessarily better than the other. It's just they're two very different approaches to how to create, you know, creatively deal with your universe. So, well, we did it, huh?
Yep.
We covered them all.
That's it. You now know everything.
You now know everything about events.
Final Crisis.
Oh, Final Crisis coming out.
Yes, what
countdown.
Is next?
May 2008.
Grant Morrison, J.G. Jones.
All right, so that's kind of our brief history of comic events in the modern age, and a little catch up on what's going on now. So that's what we had to say, but a lot of our forum posters had lots of stuff to say as well. Hank, why don't you start us off with some forum posts?
From Vorpal Keith, my main worry with the constant level of events and the threat always being amped up to the extreme is this. If everything is a world-scale threat, we're going to lose our chances to have of having smaller stories that are going to feel like they have any kind of weight.
I agree.
I don't know. Sometimes you get like the Captain America stories from House of M, though, too, where people find a way to tell a small personal story within the bigger one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a threat.
That's
of
maybe
that
where constantly. The where the crossovers have their value is telling the smaller stories within the events, and I think that's with Civil War, we felt that I thought that the Spider-Man tie-ins to Civil War were I enjoyed even more than the mainline series, and
it was good.
And so I think as the big
depends. Sometimes the crossovers work out fine. Sometimes they don't. This is from Comic Book Hero. As for big events in general, I think one of the fans asking a question at the DC Nation panel at Wars of the World Chicago put it best. I'm feeling a little bit of battle fatigue when it comes to these major crossovers. Look at DC. We have a big event chain of Identity Crisis to the myriad of books that come made up the Countdown to Infinite Crisis to Infinite Crisis to 52 to Countdown to Final Crisis. Oh, and don't forget Sinestro Cold War tossed in for good measure. I would do Marvel's chain too, but I would need a crazy tree diagram to show it all. I think we have had a lot of must-read books without any let-up.
We touched on event fatigue, but something that we didn't touch on, which we totally forgot, and we shouldn't have, is Sinestro Corps.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, it's a great event, a great summer event. Yeah,
it's and another one, Annihilation before that with Marvel was kind of the forgotten event, and a lot of people really enjoyed Annihilation, but Sinestro Corps. It's been probably my favorite event in recent history. It's so
It's really good.
And it didn't come with all of the built-up hype that you had with a lot of the other events.
Yeah.
And
that was good.
It's one of the things I really enjoy about it. It's a fairly self-contained event over two titles.
You don't need to read a lot of books.
No, I mean, they're going to have some standalones. You had the Sinestro Corps special to kick it off. You've got Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps. There'll be some one-shots, but it's really a fairly self-contained event to this point. We'll see what they do.
Yeah, I mean, they'll if it keeps selling. Because, I mean, the big thing that... I mean, the thing is, if you bemoan the event comics but keep buying them, I mean, that's why they keep making them. Because you keep buying them. So, we got one from Josh Shippy.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just Ship.
Ship! The glut of events in the 90s kind of drove me away from comics. I find it kind of funny that I've rediscovered comics in the age of event every 5 minutes. I tell up to greater variety in today's comic shop if I don't want to read an event, although most times I do, I can choose from hundreds of other books. And that is true. If you don't like events, there's plenty of other stuff going on.
Or if you don't want to read one event, you can
read the other companies.
Or not even the other companies. If you don't want to read Countdown, you can read Sinestro Corps right now. If you don't want to read, World War Hulk, you can be reading, The Annihilation.
Great options for consumers.
Well, this next one is from Simi. I believe that's how it's either Syme or Simi.
Sime.
I wonder how much of an event's impact is in the timing of when a person read the story. I started reading comics when Infinite Crisis started. Being completely ignorant about tie-in books, continuity, and the rabid internet fans that love to tear things to shreds, I found myself completely swept up in the whole thing. It was new, it was amazing, and it was exciting. However, a year later, Civil War rolled around, and by then I had listened to oodles of podcasts, read a few more stories, and discovered Newsarama. For that event, I felt pressure to buy more tie-ins because I was aware they existed. I read some threads complaining about characterization, etc., etc. Basically, the magic was lost because of being too aware of things, being more learned about the comic book industry.
Did we shatter him? By telling
we
him to
broke him. We talked about that with Hank. It's you came into Civil War and it was new. This is this is how it is.
Yeah, I thought everything was like that. I was
at that point. I was like, oh, okay. So that's this summer's event.
When I was reading it, I really really enjoyed it. But I talked to other people who have been reading comics for 10, 20 years, you know. They're like, whatever. We've seen it before.
Did we ruin you then?
Yes.
Yeah, we stole your enjoyment of something. Nothing comic book fans like more than to spread their misery amongst other comic book fans. we wouldn't fucking complain about everything, you know?
Well, the next post, and I'll let you...
Jam Fool!
He's
from the...
Quiet Panelologist. This is either Matt or John. I never can figure out which one it is.
They speak English, but it sounds weird.
I think it's John, but I'm not for sure.
I hate the thought of more events until I'm swept away in the middle of the event. Then I love it. Then the event finishes, and I'm usually frustrated with the ending. I hope there's no more events, ever. And then another one is announced, and I can't wait for it. Which is exactly true.
You're just like the rest of us.
We all do that, and that's why they keep doing it.
And then, as the panelologists have taught us, you eventually just read them while you're taking a bath. And it makes everything better.
That must be an English thing, because I haven't taken a bath in years. I don't know. Baths and lorries and lifts.
Filthy McMonkey writes, quite simply, when does an event stop being an event? When nothing happens but events.
One hand clapping. If an event happens and no one reads it, is it still an event?
Yeah, we're definitely in an age where it's one event bleeds into the next, and where does Avengers Disassembled end? Where does House of M begin? Where does... Yeah, it's... that's how it is right now, and it's going to be that way as long as they're selling. Just look at the top 10 sales charts, and that'll tell you how long events are going to be around.
Until they stop being in the top 10. This one's from Random. Wow! Lots of strong opinions about this. I just recently discovered that Identity Crisis, Infinite Crisis, The Final Crisis were meant to be a trilogy, connected by a 52-in countdown, and for some reason that made it easier for me to swallow. Well, for now. I mean, if you get to the last issue of Final Crisis and you think it sucks, then you just spent, like...
The last 4 years of my life
you just spent, like, a couple grand on books that you won't like. I guess I feel like now there really is an overarching direction and plan involved. See, I don't really believe that ever. You know, when they say that they
didn't
meant
plan
to cancel
this,
the
like,
Flash...
6 years ago, yeah.
Well, yeah, when they meant to cancel The Flash, I was like... You know, if The Flash would have kept selling 75,000 copies an issue, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have killed Bart
Allen.
But
that was our plan the entire
time. Everyone does that. No one from Marvel or DC is going to come out and be like, we don't know what the fuck we're doing. We thought
this would be successful. When Brad Meltzer pitched Identity Crisis, they didn't sit down and say, oh, yeah, and we should...
6 years. This will end with Final Crisis. I now know how the next 6 years of publishing will go. So don't buy into that too much. One of the things I wanted to mention before we got too far is that the one thing that you always have to keep in mind is, and I always keep this in mind when I read my books, is like, does the book in front of you entertain you? You know, like, single book... Is it worth the $3? You know, is that book worth $3 to you? Whether it's in an event or not, you know, because you can have a book in an event, which is a fun book in and of itself. You know, always remember, you know, if you're hating the individual issues, don't think you're going to get to the end and love it.
It's all going to be okay.
Yeah, it's all going to be just like, always remember, however you buy stuff, just like think... Am I enjoying it this much?
Have you had an event an event comic that you were enjoying all the way to the last page, and then you're like, oh, well, they just plucked the $3 out of my pocket on that last page?
Infinite Crisis.
A lot of people felt that way about Civil War.
Number 3.
I got to the end of it.
Oh, Strange Smash.
Yeah, like, snatch it out of your hands.
No, you were doing
but
so
it's also,
well.
But it's like always be realistic in your You know, if you're reading a 6-issue series and you get 3 issues in and you don't like it, I don't think the final 3 issues are going to pull it out. You know, are going
to
pull
okay
it out.
It's okay to not buy it.
Yeah, just drop it. I'm going to drop World War Hulk. You know?
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's okay.
If someone tells me it was totally sweet, I'll go get the issue. Yeah, it'll be fine, you know? That's always the thing. I think comic book fans are always so worried about missing something.
Well, sure, that's the mentality.
Yeah.
And you will miss little things.
I didn't like World War Hulk 3 that much, but I'm going to get the next two issues.
And well, then tell me if they're good, Hank.
And I'll fight you for them.
Now read!
This next post is from Brodgers. I started collecting X-Books right after the Fall of the Mutants and right before the start of Inferno. Chris Claremont on Uncanny X-Men and Excalibur with Louise Simonson on X-Factor, New Mutants, and a limited series, Exterminators, art by Alan Davis, Brett Blevins, Mark Silvestri, Walter Simonson, with John Romita Jr. On the Daredevil and Todd McFarlane on the Spider-Man tie-ins. I was really impressed by it because it changed everything in their books. Locations, teams, members, and storylines. The event changed everything in their world, and no one hit the reset switch at the end of the series to undo it. I've been slowly disappointed and jaded ever since.
What happens after that first event that you read? It's all downhill from there.
It's all right. As long as you recognize it and you're okay with it.
And you know what? We keep coming back.
We keep coming back. Funktopus writes,
best
name one of the first comics I read was an issue of Inferno X-Men. I have many fond memories of the Axe of Vengeance event. I also enjoyed Infinity Gauntlet. I recently reread it. The rest of Infinity, whatever the titles were, sucked. I always hated the events and annuals. They're all pointless. Most of the time, they introduced a pointless character that never showed up again. So I like events if they're done well. Well, I mean, everyone does. Everyone loves a well-done book.
Sure.
I like the Axe of Vengeance stories. It was cool watching Spider-Man fight people he never had before. It wasn't a huge overhyped story. It was just a good story. That's it. That made me want to pick up a few issues of some books that I never read before, which we talked about, you know? Seeing new characters.
Good for you.
Good for you.
So, events good, events bad, or just misunderstood?
Well-written books are great.
Just misunderstood.
Poorly written events are bad, just like anything else.
Exactly. So, thank you, everyone, for chiming in on the forum. There are, of course, some other ways that you can interact with the show besides that.
One of them is to go to aroundcomics.com, where you can download and print out our LCS Challenger flyer. It's all about the Challenger accident in 86. Mm-hmm. I'm kidding. That's not funny, though. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in their store. If they do, send us an email, and we'll mention you in the store, on the show, as well as post it on our site. Become a friend of ours today.
Hank wasn't even born. There was
Hank was a fetus.
I remember it.
Oh, no, you weren't even born yet, were
you? Got a
TV
in there, man.
91.
Well, we actually had
Hank just made me throw up in my mouth.
We actually have a new friend of the program. Says, hi, this is Mike Hodcore from the forum. I got my LCS.
Hardcore.
I got my LCS to put up the AC flyer. It is Media Underground Comics at 4524 Shores Drive, Suite 13. And you're going to have to help me out with the pronunciation.
Metairie,
Louisiana. And
700006.
Yeah, and you can check them out at myspace.com/MediaUndergroundComics.
Hardcore.
Yeah, Media Underground Comics.
Pretty hardcore comics.
You can make me a very, very happy person if you leave us a review at the iTunes Music Store. Thanks this week to Sean Caster for dropping some love.
He really came through for us.
Yes, he did.
You can check out all the great things that AroundComics.com has to offer. We post next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forums at AroundComics.com. Remember, you can also visit us at Comic Space and MySpace. Mm-hmm. Oh, and also I'm doing our Moblog. I'm doing the issue-by-issue Justice League of America.
You're taking on the Justice
Me
League.
Me versus the Justice League of America, mostly drunk and mostly at like around 10 p.m. at night.
How many issues so far?
I'm up to 74, so I've done 9, 10,
These are
nine,
blow-by-blow synopses.
There's synopses, and then I pick out my favorite parts, you know, the parts I don't like.
They're very, very entertaining.
Well, thank you. So I'm doing that. So check that out if you want to. I'm gonna do it. Keep going. I'm gonna have to take a couple days off for personal reasons, but I'm gonna keep rolling. I'm. It's gonna take a really long time.
How many issues is it gonna
There's
be?
There's 260. And then I want to keep going. I mean, this is a multi-year project because I'm committed to doing this. So,
so JLA Comics 101 2010 probably, right?
Yeah, at some point, yeah.
Extremely educated. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. You can find other great podcasts at comicspodcasts.com. And this episode of Around Comics has been brought to you by the fine folks at InStockTrades.com.
Waiting. Oh, wow. I jumped. I stepped all over you on that. Jumped. Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders are $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend and fiancé.
You just wanted to say essentials quicker. We are proud to help support the HERO Initiative. HERO creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809.
Give so much money, it's going to be an event. A crossover. It's going to be a crossover with my wallet.
I've crossed over a couple times this year. So
you
good,
have.
Good folks there at the HERO Initiative. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. That
I did it!
Hank.
Hank. Tom only hit me a couple times.
Yeah. I'll slap you again, I swear to God.
Hey, we missed Sal and Scotty.
I'm using both their microphones.
It was good that they had some alone time. Bonding.
The tension during the shows had become almost unbearable. Between them.
Prior to this?
Like, it ain't just, like, watching them get up in each other's faces constantly.
Oh, so angry. And
it's like the Odd Couple right now. They're sitting in a car somewhere in Wisconsin.
Sounds
trapped
like,
on a highway.
Can you please not eat in my car?
Scotty is saying, I'm bossy. And telling him where to drive.
Sounds like, I have kids.
I'm procreated. I've added to society.
Well,
I want to thank them for not being here.
Yes, thank them for taking a night off.
It's so much nicer. I get to talk more.
I know, it's very pleasant, wasn't it?
I have run out of ideas.
I miss their facial hair.
I guess. You started growing a mustache?
Well, Scotty's not here, and Sal's not here, so I'm going to grow out.
He does. Hank has kind of like this bad prepubescent mustache thing going on.
It looks great.
Rad.
Don't let anyone hate on that. It looks good.
All right. Well, folks, we'll be back again on Monday. The whole crew should be back. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in and around
comics. Comics. Mixing pills and alcohol.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.